based out of Norway. Mr. Walker is here and responsible for the strategy, business development, R&D communications, as well as sustainability and digital transformation for DNPGL. Mr. Walker has 30-plus years of international experience, extensive exposure to fast-changing multicultural environments, through a succession of senior roles, including emotional therapy, and most recently as the CEO of DNPGL's energy business. So Mr. Walker, I invite you up and address us and talk to us a bit about global trends in maritime innovation.
Thank you very much, Josh, for that very kind introduction, and good morning everybody here. And I would like to thank you all for the invitation. And I think we should all be inspired by the remarks that Governor Inslee has just made regarding the ambition that Washington should be not only a national leader, but a global leader in sustainable maritime sector going forward. I'd also like to welcome and thank the Advisory Council for being here today. We look very much forward to working with you. We have a team that's based here in Seattle that can reach out to our other colleagues across the United States and indeed globally. So hopefully we'll be able to bring something to the party to help you to develop a set of recommendations that we'll present to the governor towards the end of next year that will produce a robust and compelling strategy to ensure that we meet the goal that has been set. So DNPGL is a 150-year-old company. We are the world's largest ship classification society, but we're also the world's largest renewable energy consultancy. And bringing those two angles together, and in addition to our sustainability and energy efficiency work, we hope that we can contribute to what we want to achieve in the year to come. I believe that we have an ambitious goal, but I'm very confident that we can help you to reach that, because we've been through four industrial revolutions as a company. And during that time, we've always spent about 5% of our revenue on research and development. And one of the topics that we often create through our R&D is to create a number of outlooks that look into the future. And we've done one recently on the energy transition that we'll be sharing with the Advisory Council in the future. We've done something called the Future of Spaceship Earth that you'll see a video of later in the proceedings today. And we've also created a maritime outlook. And I'd like to build on those and maybe create a bit of a picture for what the year 2050 could look like for Washington State's, by then, booming maritime sector, and the ships and shoreside operations that are working in harmony with this beautiful ecosystem that you are fortunate to live in. So picture a future where ships glide silently through the environmental sensitive areas due to electric propulsion. When you picture ships that are fully equipped with sensors and systems that optimize routes to avoid bad weather, improve safety, and reduce the energy that they use. I want you to picture ships that are made from state-of-the-art materials and new ship designs that reduce noise and wake and they pick up emissions and impact on the shoreline. I want you to picture an industrial sector along the shoreline building these ships and using skilled labor and advanced manufacturing techniques that have leveraged the state's expertise in shipbuilding as well as digital technologies and academic leadership. Now, 2050 may seem a long way off, but the governor's just given us the example of how fast the US put the man on the moon. And indeed, if you look at 30 years back in time, things like the internet and cell phones weren't reality, and yet we use them every day now. And we have to not forget, the maritime industry builds for the long haul, and the ships that we'll be building in the near term here will still be in existence in 2050. So it's very important that we get started right now to build the reality of a sustainable future. So let me just tell you, perhaps, I was asked to say some things about the global perspective and give you some examples of what's happening elsewhere in the world. Let me start with a ship called the Vision of the Fjords. This is the world's first carbon fiber battery hybrid passenger ferry. It was delivered in 2016, and it's now operating as a sightseeing vessel in the Norwegian fjords, which are a UNESCO World Heritage tourist destination. The electric motors are used when the ship goes into the fjords to allow for silent, emission-free operation in those environmentally sensitive areas. And the hull is specially designed to minimize the wake and reduce erosion of the vulnerable shoreline. Another ship is operating in Norway as well, which is, as you heard, where JBGL originally came from. It's called the Ampere. Appropriately named, it's an electrically powered car and passenger ferry. It was launched 2 years ago. It hardly makes a sound as it travels across the water, 34 times a day, across 4 miles, and its electric power means that we've saved something like 250,000 gallons of diesel and nearly 3,000 tons of CO2 emissions in a year. It's operated by 3 battery packs, one on each pier and one on the ship itself, and those packs are charged overnight by hydroelectric power, something that Norway shares in abundance with the state of Washington. So those are two examples of technologies that are being applied in Norway, but what I'd like to do now is expand on how Norway as a country has developed its own sustainable maritime strategy. It began about 3 years ago when our company, DNVGL, held a round table at our head office in Oslo. It combined government ministers and the CEOs from leading maritime companies, a bit like the session that we're having here today. And after the debate and the exchanging of ideas, a declaration of cooperation was signed with the goal to ensure that Norway would have the world's most environmentally friendly coastal fleet in the world. And so the Green Coastal Shipping Program was born. But rather than viewing technology and innovation simply as tools to address the challenges that Norway faced, the program realized instead that government, industry, NGOs, and academia all have to work together to embrace opportunities for a sustainable, prosperous, and resilient society. And the program delivered a roadmap to the government, which identifies key enablers for the successful implementation. And it also identified a number of key pilot projects that needed to be initiated to show plans in action. And some of these demonstration projects include a fully battery-powered container ship, a hydrogen-powered passenger vessel, an LNG fuel/battery hybrid shuttle tanker, and a battery hybrid fish farming support vessel. Green port operations are also being undertaken as part of a pilot project. These projects demonstrate new innovations and new use of state-of-the-art materials. The governor's already mentioned carbon fiber. Well, carbon fiber is obviously a leading technology from the aerospace and other industries here in Washington. But in the vision of the fuels of the ship I mentioned earlier, it's helped to reduce the weight of the ship, structural weight, by 50%, and also resulted in a 20% energy saving as well. It's also created export opportunities. The Norwegian ship designers, Brother and R, are now partnering with Front Street Shipyard in Maine to build carbon fiber ferries for the American market. Another Norwegian pilot project is the one I mentioned earlier, the world's first fully electric, but also ballast-free container ship called the Yara Birkeland. This is a coastal feeder and will be built and delivered in 2019. And it's designed to reduce emissions and improve safety by moving truck traffic onto the sea. It will deliver 25,000 containers per year from a fertilizer production plant to an export port. So the ballast-free design will reduce the impact on the marine environment by eliminating the risk of alien species transfer. And overall, then, it should be the world's first electric, zero-emission, ballast-free container ship with the potential to scale to become a game-changer for the maritime industry. Now, a key enabler in Norway for the development of these opportunities has been what's called the Norwegian NOx Fund, NOx standing for nitrous oxide emissions. This was a policy which was established in 2008 to promote innovation and R&D in environmentally friendly technologies. The NOx Fund members pay fees to the fund in lieu of taxes on their NOx emissions when in Norwegian waters. Affiliated companies can then seek funding from the fund to do R&D and to develop demonstration projects. And so far, the fund has addressed something like 480 vessels and spent something like $500 million. It's got its own governing structure, which includes the companies who are members of the fund, but also representation from the government of Norway, and the DNVGL acts as the technical advisor. And it's had quite a major impact so far. Following these examples, the types of ship I mentioned, the NOx Fund, etc., the successes that Norway has had in its roadmap. Recently, the Norwegian government has now moved the policy dial even further by requesting all future public ferry procurement contract mandate law for zero emission technology. So what we have in Norway is an example of an industry-wide public-private partnership that's achieving much towards a common goal of Norway creating its own sustainable maritime industry, but it's creating thousands of new jobs in new sectors and new technologies, and also is helping to, go global. So the question is, have other nations also looked at how this can be done? OVGL has worked with two other countries to develop leading maritime centres, and which have similarly set ambitious goals, and they're well on the road to achieving them. Now, the first example lies something like 8,000 miles southwest of here in the city-state of Singapore. So Singapore has long been the maritime centre and the nexus for international maritime industry in Southeast Asia. But they're determined to maintain their position, and so the Maritime and Port Authority of Singapore is committed to investing in and leveraging the latest port in maritime technology. To achieve this, they've implemented an R&D strategy steered by an advisory committee, not so dissimilar to the group that we have here today. And the council oversees a range of investments and incentives to support R&D and innovative technologies. Interesting, Singapore model stresses the importance of collaboration, not only across government, industry, and academia, but with neighboring states and with trading partners for everyone's mutual benefit. In addition to the Port Authority, DNVGL has also worked with the Singapore Economic Development Board, and indeed they're the sponsors of our Clean Technology Center and our Deep Water Technology Centers, both started in Singapore back in 2010. And most recently is another example, if you like, of a public-private partnership. We signed an MOU, a Memorandum of Understanding, with industry partners for collaboration to develop disruptive applications in additive manufacturing, so 3D printing, and using drones for the inspection of the ships, and an digital twin concept. And so these will help revolutionize Singapore's offshore marine sector and boost its global competitiveness. So working with the port state and also with the development board, Singapore is pushing itself forward with industry to maintain a leadership position in Southeast Asia. Maybe for east of here, we see another example of what can be achieved when government and industry share a vision. 15 years ago, Dubai, their oil revenue was running out, and they had to come up with a strategy for how they could secure the future of this young emirate state. One of the strategies that DNVGL was asked to implement was to establish Dubai as a leading maritime cluster, building on its strategic position as a port that's halfway between Asia and Europe. So we worked with the Dubai government to evaluate their standing in the global maritime industry, create with the government a set of strategic ambitions, and then their road plan of action to reach those. And the government has now systematically implemented policy, investment, and incentives to make sure it gets there. So what in 2007 was a port and logistics hub known only for its repair yards and oil field services, now boasts a growing owned and operated fleet that's ranked one of the largest, fastest growing in the world. And the port itself is now ranked as the third most attractive destination for the relocation of shipping companies. Indeed, another survey that we ourselves conducting with Men on Economics earlier this year ranks Dubai as the 10th most important maritime city in the world, and it's on trajectory to reach the 7th best by 2020. A key part of the Dubai strategy has been to establish the Dubai Maritime City, a sort of innovation focal point for the maritime cluster to coordinate their development efforts. So having risen from the sands 10 years ago, Dubai Maritime City now stands at the center of a maritime industry that is worth around $60 billion. So we can draw lessons from these three international examples, Norway, Singapore, and Dubai, and what governments, industry, and society, when they're united in the desire to succeed and aligned with the strategy, then great economic and environmental achievements are possible. So we believe the state of Washington and all the elements that the Advisory Council represent under the aegis of the Department of Commerce can achieve the vision of Washington State being the world's nations and have heard global most sustainable maritime industry by the year 2050. We already have from the governor, and we'll hear later on this morning from several representatives, there's very strong foundations to build off already in the state. We believe this is a realistic vision because the technical solutions are already available. They just need to be applied. And of course, as I've said, Washington has the services, the suppliers, the people, and the shipbuilding capabilities to build on. We believe that by working together, we can remove the barriers to implementation and ensure that support is needed to enable these solutions is fully utilized. But it won't only require commitment, it also requires compromise from the parties who are involved. So we're very pleased as DMVGL to join the state and the leaders of Washington and the maritime community in this ambitious journey to secure a strong future, a future in which Washington's maritime industry will build the new environmentally friendly vessels with locally manufactured equipment and delivering advanced services to ships that operate not just in the state's coastal waters, but across the Pacific and indeed across the entire globe. It's a future where you will lead the nation as an example for broader sustainable economic development and the export of maritime-related environmental technologies. It's a future which will turn challenges that are facing us into employment opportunities, into economic growth, and into positive environmental impact, and thereby capture and capitalize on the potential of these three measures for the strategic benefit of Washington State and its citizens. Thank you very much.